Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio. We're at RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com. We're at LATalkRadio.com. I'm at SheenaMetal.com. And Raising the Vibration Radio is an offshoot of a movement of peace, love, kindness, and unity that I started last year. We're at IamRaisingTheVibration.com. Please go there and find us as well. I would be honored. The movement is called I Am Raising the Vibration of the Nation and the World. And we're just putting more love and kindness and positivity into the world. And every week on the show, I feature a person that I adore that has worked to make the world a better place and has the right kind of attitude, the positivity that we all need to have, and I'm honored to have her here today. Please welcome to the show my wonderful friend, Lainey Kazan. How are you, my friend?
I'm good.
It's good, Sheena, to have you here. You've been on my daily show here, the Sheena Metal Experience, many times, and I've always been so impressed with your wonderful attitude.
Oh,
and that's why you're
you.
Here.
Well, I think I'm just a fighter, you know. I'm they call me the what do they call me? My musicians call me the little trooper.
Oh, you just keep trooping. Why do you think that is? Because we've talked a lot when you've been here about what it's like to survive the entertainment business,
yes,
what it's like to have a career in music, a career in acting, and a lot of people just, they can't stick with it, right? They let all the bad build up until it breaks them, and they get on a bus and go home.
You know, I think I'm very lucky because I had a very happy childhood, and I think that has been my base. That's my rock. That's how I survive, because I never felt that things were unable to achieve.
Right.
I never felt beaten down, although I have been beaten pretty
sure.
Down.
You and me both.
But I just think I always see the sweet side. Today is a terrible day. I woke up to that horrible massacre.
Know.
And I hope the vibrations at you, you know, because this is just abominable what's going on.
Me too. Yeah, I just was thinking today, because I just started a blog for my I Am Raising the Vibration.com movement called A Vibration Nation, and I kind of picked different things out. I just wrote my first one. My first one was sort of about how, you know, I'm a very proud citizen of this country, and I think that despite politics and despite how we have differences sociopolitically and culturally, we need to kind of band together in the fact that we all have to live here together and find a way to get along. And I think I'm going to write one, I was just thinking on the way over today, kind of about the violence and when are we as human beings going to realize that either we're all going to kill each other and it's going to become a post-apocalyptic escape from New York kind of society.
Right.
Or we're going to have to get it together and find a little peace. And
I hope we do.
Me too.
I hope we do. I just feel that with the president being so arbitrary and so negative,
yeah,
that it comes from the top sometimes. You
I
know?
Agree.
And it's been a very hard road.
I think for all
for
of us.
For all of us.
I think for absolutely all of us. I mean, clearly not for some of us, right? Because some people are thrilled with that attitude.
I don't see how.
But I do believe that it trickles down, and I also think that human beings, I always say, if you want to really understand people, watch that Animal Planet documentary called The Dark Side of Chimps. There is an angry monkey side in a lot of people. And we have to have rules, and we have to have edges, because the human animal needs boundaries.
Most definitely.
So I think when the top of the pack, and our president, whether we like it or not, is the top of the pack, is being insulting and threatening other world leaders and telling people they're fired and insulting people for football players for just, you know, exhibiting their own civil rights, which they're allowed to. There are certain people who kind of almost have like a bullying sleeper cell, and they think, oh, I can be like that, and it gets awakened. And then suddenly they think,
so
I can do that. I can shoot some people. I can yell at somebody. I can scream at somebody at the water cooler at work. I mean, we see that, right? How sometimes we as women, I think, see, because women aren't always the best to each other.
Isn't that so?
Right?
Especially amongst teenagers. You know, yeah. I have a teenage granddaughter, and those girls are so mean to each other. It's like it starts then.
Yeah. And it keeps and going, right?
It keeps going. Yeah.
I mean, the jealousy and the way that we'll, throw each other under the bus for something we want, and when we should all be supporting each other.
Yeah, I didn't grow up like that.
I didn't either.
It's just very, it's the times. I really think it is. I think that, did you see that high school documentary? About how these kids, what's really going on in high school?
No.
Oh my goodness, it's really fabulous. It's I think it's on A&E. You should watch it because it's mind-boggling that these kids treat each other like they do, and they have no one to look up to except who's in the news.
Yeah.
And they see life as it shouldn't be.
But were you close with your mom?
Yeah, very close.
See, me too. Do you think that, like you said, you said your good childhood, do you think that always knowing that you had something to tether yourself to, you could always ask your mom something, you could always go back and if girls at school were mean or a boy at school was mean, you could come back and your mom would say, don't sweat it, kid, cookies and slap you on the back.
Yes.
Or my mom would make me laugh. My mom's whole, because we were Irish, and her whole thing was an Irishman's survival guide is you laugh at it. So she'd make a funny something about something, and I would laugh, and then I would feel better. So, but I think for people that came home and didn't have that, that either nobody was home or whoever was home.
It's a whole culture.
Right.
With the key, what do they call it?
Latchkey kids. Yeah.
Latchkey kids. And they come home and there's no one there.
Right. Or even whoever's there isn't interested.
Right.
I see. I think about this because I know how close you are with your daughter. And you've talked about that when you've been on my Daily Show. And I see the moms in grocery stores with their kids, and they have their earbuds in.
And they're on their phone.
Or they're talking to somebody, or they're listening to music. They're paying no attention to the child. And sometimes, or two women are pushing strollers. They're talking to each other, and sometimes they're complaining about the kids, like, this mother thing. I know, it's terrible. One more day, and I'm going to kill myself. And you have to know the kids are listening to that. No one's engaging
them.
We
were just talking about that.
Well, yeah. It's wow.
Yeah, it's sad.
It's kind of sad.
It's very sad, and it doesn't give them an interesting view on life either. Because these kids hear bad words, they hear the parents cursing, and it saddens me very much.
So, as a mom who was in the entertainment business when you had your kid, how
did I handle it?
Yeah, because obviously we all grew up with kids that were exposed to the entertainment business that came out fantastic, and we were exposed to kids who saw it and their parents sort of enveloped them into it at a young age, and then they had a lot of problems. So how did you keep that crazy world? Because our business is, it's crazy and it's
raunchy.
But
you never know what kind of a DNA the child comes from.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
Sometimes we do our best to make life beautiful or try to make life wonderful, and the child goes on its own way.
Very true.
And I had it, my child, when I was 28. And I always had help. I always had help. I tried very hard. I brought my daughter up by myself. And I'm now doing that with my granddaughter. Because my daughter just had a little baby, two-and-a-half-year-old baby. And he is the cutest little child I've ever seen.
I think he had just been born the last time you were
here. Yes.
You were just getting ready for a christening party or a baby shower. Maybe he hadn't been born yet. Maybe he was just about to be.
I think so. And I think my daughter was lost for a long time. And I just pray that she finds her way, because I provided her with a vision of the world that she says is not realistic.
Oh, okay.
And she seeked to go on another road. She was very attracted to people who were living under the radar.
Okay.
And she's now realizing what she lost.
Yeah.
And she's trying very hard to make up for it and to consider what she chose, her choices. But I there was nothing I could do after a while. I brought her up until she was ready for college. And when she went off to college, when you think you're going to have the most incredibly wonderful relationship with your
that's
child.
That's what my mom and I were the closest.
Yeah,
I
know. Yeah. Me too. She just went on her own. Yeah, she did. And it's been a long road.
I find, and what you said about DNA is interesting, because I find that a lot of people have a restlessness inside of them. And it doesn't matter what their upbringing is, although it certainly becomes worse if there's no upbringing or if the parents are not interested. Right. Some people have to try everything and rebel and try something different.
I was
different.
Like that, actually. I still am restless, believe it or not, at my age. I have that wanderlust. And when I get too comfortable in a place, I gotta go.
But it doesn't seem with you to get you in trouble. Because from listening to you talk about your career when you've been here, it sort of seems like you just find something else to do that you're also very good at.
Yes.
And you wind up in another place. Most people, I think, with wanderlust never really land anywhere. They wander and wander and wander. Yeah. And
because I'm very lucky. I'm a very lucky woman. I mean, I have had my problems, and this last year has been abomination, because I broke several bones in my body and have been healing, and I'm doing very well, though, knock wood. I'm knocking everything.
You look terrific.
Thank you so much.
And you know, I was always checking in. I was worried about you the whole time, because I've been through that with auto accidents, and I know what it's like.
Yeah, well, I went on a cruise. It's really hilarious, but I had my knee replaced.
Okay.
And I went on a cruise to relax.
Okay.
And the last night on the cruise, we landed in Panama. And I fell going up the bathroom step. Because they have a huge marble step. And I was tired, and I couldn't lift that leg up. And I smashed my shoulder in pieces. Mm. And my friend Jean, who's here right now, thank God she was with me on the cruise. And they checked me into a Panamanian hospital where no one spoke English. Mm. And I was on morphine. I was a mess. But somehow I got back. I had the most brilliant doctor, and he put my shoulder together.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And your knee is okay?
It's perfect.
Okay.
I feel great. I swim every morning.
Yeah, I've been doing that too. There's a magic to that,
isn't
right?
It?
There's an energy to being in the water. I think it makes you more creative. So many creative things flow through me.
True.
The minute I get in that water, I start writing. I've started dictating into my iPhone. I keep it with me, and I always keep
Not
it by the side
water.
Of the pool. No, I keep it by the side of the pool, and when things start coming, I'll stop and talk them into the phone and then go back to swimming. I really believe there's a magic energy in water, that it's healing.
I think
it's creatively inducing. It's spiritually inducing. It's a little bit of everything.
I agree.
And apparently good for a knee.
Apparently the best.
Wow.
For broken bones and exercising. I exercise in the pool.
And it's gentle on the broken bones.
Yeah, because there's no weight on you.
Right.
But I lost a lot of weight.
You lost a lot of weight.
I lost about 35 pounds.
You look fantastic.
Thank you, Sheena.
But there is a healing road, right? I mean,
sure. But to get back to what we were saying before, I think I just am not a negative person.
I agree. That's why you're here.
Right? I mean, I just, and I love adventures. And most of the adventures I've taken have been a positive adventure.
Yeah.
I've been very lucky. I've chosen teachers and friends who are healthy, pretty much. They have success in their lives on one level or another. And I think it's important who you choose to surround yourself with.
So important.
It really
is. I think it's absolutely. And don't you find that the happier you get and the more you find your way to you, unfortunately, there are others that can't follow you.
Right.
There are people that leave your life because they don't grow at the same rate that you grow.
Right.
And it's always sad for me when you have to let somebody go. That's a very hard thing for me in my life, to let people go.
I know, me too.
But sometimes you have to let people go, and sometimes you let them find their way.
And they come back.
And they go off, and they grow, and they come back. Sometimes sort of, you know, swimming on your coattails were why they weren't growing. And sometimes it's just they weren't meant to be in your life for your life. But, and then also I find when you go through something, like you've been at home recuperating, and you have a lot of time to think when you're recuperating. I had a problem with my heart at the end of last year, and I was at home. I mean, I'm never home, right? I was at home for 2 months under a blanket with my laptop. I got a lot of things done, like I created a peace movement, but I was alone a lot. And I find when you're that way, you grow a lot because you have a lot of time to think. About how you feel about things and make plans and what you want to do next and what you wish you'd always done and what you don't want to do again. And so you emerge from something like that sometimes spiritually 10 years older because you've been doing all that work. Everybody else hasn't had that time to have that kind of spiritual experience.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's been when someone says, how are you now? And I hear myself say, I'm great. I'm like, I'm in shock because everything hurt me. And now nothing hurts me. I'm amazed. I'm amazed at the resilience, the ability to heal oneself.
Yeah.
We are amazing people.
Yes.
We are amazing.
Yeah.
And we have the ability to heal ourselves and to treat ourselves with respect and honor our bodies. And I've always been like that. I did yoga for years, like 30 some odd years. And
do you no longer?
I don't, because I can't.
Yeah.
I can't. I have all aluminum parts.
Oh.
I'm like, I do. I have a knee and a hip. And
really?
Oh, yeah. I have all kinds of replacements. So, yeah, it's been a journey.
Do you set off at the airport? Do you have
I
to,
do.
Yeah. I have a friend who was in an auto accident. Interestingly enough, one of my best friends was in a very bad one just a couple years before we met when I was in my bad one. And so she has a whole, like a pelvis and a whole, so she has a little card that she carries,
a business card, right?
And it has her parts on one side, and on the back it has the doctor's number in case you have to call.
I have that,
and
too.
It's so interesting to look at her little skeleton with all the, but they told her.
I looked at my shoulder just recently. Yeah. They put it back together with nuts and bolts. And I have no pain, no nothing. It's a miracle to me.
They told her she'd never walk again. And she skis and she does Pilates. And she went back to school and got her nursing degree and lifted all those patients. She's way stronger than I am.
That's great.
But isn't that, you know, you never should listen to when they say you're never gonna or you can't. Or
yeah.
They told me with my heart, this will come back and eventually you will be an AFib full time and you'll have to learn how to live with it. And I didn't take that answer. So I went on the internet and I found out all vitamins I could take and organic things I can do. And I was seeing a chiropractor because I was in an auto accident, which is what set this off. And I was seeing him for my back, which is what pinches the nerve, the vagal nerve. And I said, what do you think? And he said, I think you should take this magnesium supplement and take this CoQ10 and do this and sleep at this time and eat like this and cut this out. And I did everything everybody told me. And lo and behold, I've been out of AFib for 8 months.
I was AFib as well.
It's quite uncomfortable.
I didn't know what was wrong with me. But I have not one ounce of anything wrong right now. I mean, I'm hoping that I stay
like this. It's the water.
You think?
I think it's magic. I think the water has a healing property.
And I think you have to drink a lot of water, too.
Oh, yes. So you have to have the water in you
and
outside of you.
Yeah.
Exactly. You basically have to just be a fetus all the time.
Right.
Water outside, water inside.
Yeah. No. And it's amazing to me how life has changed for all these people who have, you know, arthritis and dramatic conditions of their elbows and their knees. And that we can be put together like this.
Yeah.
And function primarily very, very well.
I agree. And really learn to embrace all these ancient remedies that people used thousands of years ago.
I do a lot of acupuncture. I believe in it 100%.
And mix that with all of these fantastic new technologies
Amazing.
And we're learning to heal ourselves.
It's fabulous.
Which is absolutely amazing. And to live not in pain, right? Because you're an active person. Everything you do, you have to be moving on your feet, dancing, singing.
So in pain. But the thing that is really the most difficult for me right now, and I share this with you, is the fact that I haven't been singing.
Yeah.
And to me, that's my life force.
I know.
And I haven't been singing, and it's like a muscle, like anything else. You lose the ability to control it.
Right.
And so I am now just taking baby steps. I haven't taken a job singing. I'm just now being offered some work. And slowly but surely, I'm going to be able to do it. But I have to really concentrate on that instrument that is so precious to me.
Right. But you have to know that you have to believe that like your knee and like your shoulder, it'll come right back. It's going to be as easy as being in the water and swimming. Yeah. You just have to do it.
Because it's such a painful thing for me not to use it and express myself. And it's been a frustration. So I'm hell-bent.
But you have acted during this time.
I have. Because it doesn't take my whole soul.
Right.
It just takes a portion of my body, of my who I am.
Right.
Because I heighten that part of my life.
Yeah.
And also, it's not as physical.
Yeah.
Because singing is huge physical
involvement.
I mean, your whole body is into that note that you're singing. And I never appreciated so much. I have never appreciated what I can do. You know, that fact that I have this gift and that it's my life force.
Yeah. And you have such a beautiful gift. We talked about this the last time you were here, that you have an ability to sing for the song. And that is such a rare gift. Because most people have the one thing they can do. They can sing one way. They always sound that way. You hear the three notes and you're like, oh, that's so-and-so.
Right.
But you have this beautiful ability to spiritually morph your instrument for what the song should be. And to really partner with the song itself.
It's because I'm an actor.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't know if I was teaching at the time I was here, but I'm now an adjunct professor at UCLA.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, Sheena, I cannot tell you the satisfaction I get from teaching these brilliantly talented kids. And I'm a good teacher.
And are you teaching acting?
I teach acting for the singer.
Oh, so important, right?
Yeah, because most of these kids, they just get a song. They don't know what they're singing about.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I give them a method.
Yeah.
And how to go back and how to do that without ruining their instrument, without putting it in jeopardy.
Right.
Because sometimes these voice teachers, it's scary. They do things like just ridiculous. I mean, I had a voice teacher once that held my tongue and made me sing with my tongue wrapped in a gauze. And his disciples still do that.
What was the purpose
of that? I'm not going to tell you who it was.
No. I don't want to know who it was. I want to know what
was the purpose of
what the purpose
the
was.
Purpose
yeah, I would never ask who it was.
I don't remember. I think it was to open up the channel, to open up the resonating channel.
Okay.
And I think it's where you should be if you do it yourself with practice.
Okay.
But he forced that channel.
Okay.
He forced the opening.
Okay.
And people, you know, also they do ridiculous things. Ridiculous.
Well, even with acting coaches, right? I mean, the coach that tells you, like, you're terrible, you're never going to be good, you're horrible in this, thinking that somehow that's going to make you work extra hard to be good.
But that doesn't work in any field.
Because actors and singers are these, they're like sponges with this porous skin that lets all of this, they're empaths. You're completely an empath. That's why this Las Vegas thing is affecting you so much. So if you sit there and scream at a sponge that you're no good, it's going to, you know, it's like when those studies that you scream at coral and it moves in, like, and then you're going to get nothing. I don't understand why anybody thinks.
But that doesn't work, that kind of teaching in any
area. No, I've heard stories about directors.
Oh, my God.
Oh, to me it's just, look, I am a director and I'm a teacher. The way you get a great performance out of an actor is to love
nurture,
it out of them.
Nurture
yes.
them.
Yes.
And tell them,
use love.
That was right. That's
yes.
great. Not, that's wrong, that's wrong. Don't do
right.
that ever again. But ignore that.
Right. Just say, this was beautiful. That, now try this too.
Exactly.
And start with the positive.
I believe that.
But I think teachers in general or people, bosses, everybody, if we just started with the positive.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. When you're, listen, I have my downside.
Well, we all do.
But
Did you miss the part that I'm Irish? I've got a temper.
And I'm Jewish.
So you've got a temper. We're basically just different lost tribes.
Right. But I remember when I was working, and I had two nightclubs. I was also singing at different venues and big hotels. And I had a child and people working for me. And sometimes I would just get up in the morning screaming. you know, I couldn't help it. I would say, stop it. That's dumb. Or whatever would come out of my mouth, which was terribly, it stopped the person from being his best self
yeah.
or her best self. And I have been guilty of that. I've been guilty of that. I know Jean Marie worked for me for 42 years. She's worked for me.
She's still smiling. I know. She's still going on cruises with you. You can't be all bad.
No.
But I think we all go through that. But that's growing, right? You grow. You
yeah,
realize.
Well, you realize you're really messing up.
I had an actor, not on this show, but in doing my daily show, who's been on the show before, a couple of weeks ago, say, you know what, in the past... And I was guilty of getting frustrated with people when they didn't do what they said they were going to do.
I hate dumb.
When they didn't do it quickly, when they weren't listening. She said, but I've just decided now it just feels better to be nice.
Yeah, and move along.
Yeah.
Just don't deal with that person.
Right.
You know, because if they if they frustrate you too much,
right.
It's not healthy.
Well, and that's something I was guilty of, and that's something that even now that I've started it, November 9th will be the year anniversary of this movement. I now realize I start to say something and I think,
don't say that.
You're the vibration girl. You be a good girl. Of feeling almost like I was the dispenser of justice, and I had to tell people, why can't you be a good person? Why can't you do what's right? And even in my own life, with people in my life, waiting for them to come back around and say, you're right, I should have done the right thing. And the
truth
is,
they have very rarely
they're not like
that.
Some people just, not everybody's like you. And there's a kind of ego I found in me in expecting that people are going to come around and act the way that I do.
And you make private deals with yourself.
Yes.
You say, oh, that person should do this.
Right.
Who
that
says
person's going to realize.
Right.
And they don't. Because they're a different person. They're the person that we need the edges for, because they're the dark side of chimps.
And I am also very attracted to healing people.
Yes,
like
me too.
If I get a woman or a man who needs nurturing,
me
needs
too.
I will take the trouble and the time to give that person another shot at whatever they're going to do.
Yeah.
So, and it's criticized. My daughter will tell me all the time, why are you taking this person on? I say, because they deserve to have another chance.
Yeah.
And I see a growth in them, and I see that they're trying really hard.
That's
and
beautiful.
If that somebody tries like that, I want to help them.
I agree.
But I will not injure myself anymore.
I was just going to say, but I've had to learn when you
stop.
Have to let it
yeah,
go.
Yeah.
And when there's a time to, which I do through this movement and through these shows, to heal people on a mass scale and
that's
not necessarily
difficult.
Take on people that I'm healing myself. I have an expression now, I don't foster anything over 15 pounds. So if it's under 15 pounds, I might adopt it. But if it has four legs and fur. But otherwise, I was constantly healing people to the point where there was nothing for me. My whole life was taking care of people.
Yeah, I know that.
And you can't, you know, you have to put the oxygen mask on you first, and then you can save everyone on the plane.
Exactly.
And I was doing the opposite. So I think sometimes we have, it's okay to let go. The world forgives you. The universe, God, will forgive you. You don't have to heal everybody.
How long have you been doing this?
The radio? I just celebrated 23 years.
Wow. You're fabulous.
Thank
by the
you.
Way. You're just a wonderful interviewer.
Thank you.
Just great.
Thank you. It's fun. It's just a conversation, right?
Right.
This is not a different conversation than if we were sitting in a Starbucks with coffee.
Right.
That's really what it should be. I think that one of the things that is lacking in this world that you talked about at the beginning of the hour, where the kids are growing up in and not knowing where to look or where to go for guidance, is just listening to people talk. And because it's a way we figure things out in our own lives,
and learn,
right?
And learn.
Yeah, and just
the best way to do something. My experience has been that conversation is a lost art.
I agree.
I mean,
sad.
I sit at a restaurant sometimes, and I'll look at a table. Everybody's got their cell phone on. There's no conversation. There's nothing happening. I mean, in my house, we discussed politics. We discussed the weather. We discussed history. I mean, that was what dinner was for.
Yeah.
You sat together, and you talked about your day and what you've done. But these people, they don't say anything. They don't talk to each other.
No. And they're at the table, Lady Wright, and they're with their friends or whomever, their mates or whomever, family, and they're tweeting out ideas they think to the world,
right?
But they're not speaking to the people in their lives about the ideas.
It's true. It's very true. And it makes me, a lot makes me sad. That makes me sad. But and I try very hard to maintain, like I'll say to my kids, don't bring those phones into the dining room. Do not. And they'll do it anyway. They're sitting under the table with their phone here. So,
yeah, it's hard. It's very difficult. How are you feeling about the world politically? Are you? How did last year affect you in the middle of everything else going
on
in your year?
Oh, my God, yeah. I was a Hillary girl.
Yeah, me too.
And I was in shock. Dismay. I felt like we had lost the right to be who we were, and I was very disappointed in the nature of our people in this country. I couldn't believe that this man won. I still can't believe it. And the fact is that he was my boss. I worked for Trump.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did two jobs for him. One at Trump Castle and one at another Trump hotel in Atlantic City. And he was wonderful to me. And he was polite and kind. He was married to Marla Maples at the time. And he took me and my conductor out for dinner. It was charming. I met him at his house in Florida, at his beautiful home. And I'm shocked that he is who he is. I'm shocked by it. And I think I just can't even tell you how I just abhor whatever he's doing.
Now, do you think he changed? Do you think
no.
the pursuit of politics changed him, or do you think?
I think he's an egomaniac.
I do too.
And I think that with each growth step, he became more insane.
Yeah.
Some people get clearer, better,
yeah.
focused.
Grow.
Yeah, grow. And he just... I'm shattered by his term in office.
You know, the day after the election, well, I wanted to move to Ireland. And then and it was my mother's birthday and my first without
her.
And then I remember thinking, well, Hillary's going to be president, and that'll get me through Mom's
right?
birthday. And because my mom loved her 10 times more than I do, even. And then the second thought I had was, do I want to live in a country with people that voted for this?
That's what I'm saying.
For being a bully and for being lowest common denominator. And for the first time in my life, and I am the biggest patriot, I grew up in one of the 13 colonies. Like, I have flags, and I love President Lincoln, and my grandparents, my grandmother grew up with the Roosevelts. Like, I have the,
I know.
I'm a Sousamarch.
Right.
And suddenly, I just didn't want to be here. I thought, for the first time in my life ever, I considered moving out of the country.
I did, too.
Never felt that way. And then I sort of got a universal download that I was supposed to stay and do this movement. So I stayed. But it's fascinating to me. And I lost two of my very best friends because of the election. Both were girls, two women. One was gay. And but
what
they,
is their story?
They became what I like to call Trumpaholics.
That's what I mean.
And
too.
They just couldn't. And then suddenly after the election, one I lost before, one I lost right after, there became this anger like, well, I'm not talking to any more people who voted for her. She's terrible. And it just, and I was like, what? I mean, even though we had had so many discussions,
right,
that we're going to stay friends no matter what happens after the election.
I have a girlfriend who's an actress. She was so to the left, I can't even tell you. She married a guy who's a Republican, head of a big company. And all of a sudden, she's a Republican.
Yeah.
And it, not that, you know, there aren't great Republicans out there and people I would socialize with, because I'm not a person who would, you know, not open myself to ideas and points of view that are different from what I think.
Yeah.
Because I could learn from that, too. But she just changed right in front of my eyes. I mean, I couldn't believe it. And she voted for Trump.
Wow.
And she still will say, you'll see. You just wait. I say, I want to drop dead before he changes, or, you know.
I'll tell you an interesting story that I just have never told anybody, because I just came to the realization this weekend. I know that you worked for Hugh Hefner for a while.
Yeah.
And you know that my godfather was his accountant and his high school best friend. And they had at some point had some kind of falling out, I don't know, maybe in the 80s. And then my godfather died in the 90s. And my mom and I always tried to figure out, what could that have been about? What was that falling out about? And then when Hef died a couple of days ago, I saw this thing about what really... an activist he was for progression.
Most definitely.
You know, the first person to put a person of color on Playboy. He, you know, on a magazine, had not happened before. Very into LGBT rights. And I suddenly remembered that my godfather had sort of become what my mom called a John Bircher, and had become progressively more and more right. And sadly, my godmother, who was my mother's best friend in the whole world, kind of went that way too. And we had this joke where I would tell her something about my life and she would say, is this a story we can tell Jackie? And then we would decide whether or not we could tell her that story. And she had gone from being very liberal, because my mother's parents, because my grandmother grew up with FDR, they were very Democrat and very liberal. My mother was very liberal, and she had been too when they were in college together. And then she had married this guy, and it sort of drifted away from my mother at one point. And then when, I can't believe I'm telling the story, when they got back together after he died and started seeing each other all the time, one day she made this casual remark to my mom about thinking that she was Jewish. And my mom said, but I'm not Jewish, I'm Irish. But my grandfather, my adopted grandfather, was Jewish, half Jewish, and had converted to Presbyterianism for my grandmother when they got married. But his relatives in Milwaukee took care of my mom while she went to college and took care of my godmother. So somehow, my mom always said, do you think she didn't talk to me all that time because because he didn't like Jewish people? Well, I suddenly wondered if maybe the falling out he had with his childhood best friend was over conservative versus liberal. Because if it had been enough that maybe it had stopped my godmother and my mother from talking, maybe all of Hef's progressive rights activism was a reason they had a falling out. It can happen.
Of course.
Just occurred to me over the weekend, the day that Hef died, I thought, is that what it was? Was it politics? Because it happens. It tears friends apart.
It does.
And we're seeing it all the time now.
It's really interesting, because my girl, we don't talk politics at all now. Just don't say a
yeah,
word.
It's hard.
So, you know, I can't believe she's a right winger. I can't believe it.
I can't believe anybody could be a woman and or gay and think that was a solution. But it happens. It's
yeah, it's interesting, because a lot of people think Hefner, he... you know, put women in the foreground to seduce, to you know, objectify. But he was really a wonderful boss.
Oh, yeah. Everybody I ever knew that knew anything about him, including the stories my godfather told.
And he gave me a chance. He gave me the greatest opportunities in my career. He gave me two nightclubs. And I was down on my heels. I was like in a very bad place financially, spiritually. I'd just been fired from a Broadway show. And so it was very public. And I was up in Milwaukee, that you just said,
yeah,
Milwaukee.
Right, yeah.
I was up in Milwaukee, and I was at a place called Center Stage. And the guy who owned it was in the mob. And my checks would bounce all the time. And I thought to myself, I got to remember this place. It was in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. And I had the most wonderful time there one winter, performing there. And I said to myself, I'm going to call them and see if I could come and just spend a night or two and maybe, you know, get this horrible place out of my body, out of my blood. So I called, and the owner, the manager of the hotel said, come, Lainey, come on up and bring your family. So I went with my daughter and a nanny and my boyfriend, and we all went up to Lake Geneva, Wisconsin, and the place was like, are you all right?
I'm fine,
oh,
yeah.
The place was like deserted, and I thought, why don't they do this? Why don't they do that? Make a long story short, they said, do you want to go down to Chicago and meet with Hefner?
Oh.
And I said, yeah, what am I going to talk about? He said, just tell him what you're telling me. And I did that. And he said to me, you know what, Lainey? I have a club in L.A. that is really not doing well. It's been in the red for months and months. There's a lot of cocaine trafficking. There's a lot of drug trafficking. It's just not good. And they could use someone like you. Put your stamp on it.
Wow.
So I said,
I love that.
I said, I'll go. And then I put the club in the black in 6 months, and then they offered me New York.
Wow.
And so I ran two nightclubs for 4 years.
Wow.
And it was the best. He revitalized my life.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
We have to take a quick break, then we're going to be right back
okay. With
the wonderful Lainey Kazan right after this. It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio. And we'll be back right here. We're at IamRaisingTheVibration.com and RaisingTheVibration.com. Find us, and we'll be back with more positivity and love.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Larry Russ, former keyboardist and vocalist for Iron Butterfly, and I'm here to tell you about that abuse is an epidemic in our world. Abuse has many forms, spousal and child abuse, sex and human traffic victims, and sexual abuse. Musicians Against Abuse wants to do something about it, and you can help. Contact maabuse.com. That's maabuse.com. Join me and let's do something about it. maabuse.com.
Alcohol-related harm affects us all. Everyone knows someone who's been touched. Alcohol-related harm ranges from lost jobs to serious mental and physical disease, from ruined family life to property damage, from violent crime to homelessness, death, or prison. Go to alcoholjustice.org and sign up for action alerts and e-news. Then you'll be ready to add your voice to many others when it's time to call for action that will reduce alcohol-related harm.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. So join me 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time at www.latalkradio.com on Channel 1. And let's explore All About Guitar.
When was the last time a song made a difference in your life? If you're a songwriter who would like to help the victims of the recent hurricanes, your music can make a difference. By offering one song download for just $1, you can help bring aid and hope to those in need. To find out more information and join songwriters Michelle Mangione and Grace Slick in this effort, please visit writersforthestorm.com. That's WRITERS forthestorm.com.
As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
When Debbie Fragner gave birth to Maddie, she imagined a world of possibilities. But when her daughter was diagnosed with cerebral palsy, a neurological condition that impacts a person's ability to move and maintain balance, she had to adjust her expectations. Cerebral palsy affects 1 in 323 children in the U.S. While this diagnosis may limit Maddie's physical abilities, it doesn't limit her ability to dream. Maddie is now 9 and has a dream to dance, which inspired the creation of the Children's Cerebral Palsy Movement, a nonprofit dedicated to the design and funding of innovative therapies that address not only the physical challenges of these children, but their dreams as well. As part of their Community Giving Day program, Whole Foods Market will donate 5% of net day sales to our movement on June 15th at their Tustin location and June 22nd in Newport Beach. Your purchases on these days will help further our cause. For more information, please call 714-746-4085. That's 714-746-4085.
Hi, my name is Michael Vaccaro. I have a groovy web series called Child of the 70s with some really groovy people in it, including Bruce Valanche, Jerry Jewell from The Facts of Life, Ted Lange from The Love Boat, comedian Judy Tenuta, Carolita White from Laverne and Shirley, Ann Walker from Sordid Lives, Amy Linker from Square Pegs, Gina Heck from Mork and Mindy. We have Johnny Hazard, Leo Forte, Terry Ray, Chuck Sakula, and LA Talk Radio legend Sheena Metal. I play this guy who idolizes a 1970s TV star, but then he gets a job as her personal assistant. You know how they say that you should never meet your personal idols? Well, you know, you can find us on YouTube, Funny or Die, Out TV, and you can also go to our website, www.theofficialchildofthe70s.com. It's groovy. Hey, did I say that already? Yeah, it's groovy. I'm a
child of the 70s. OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
California legislator sends Bill SB 524 to Governor Brown to protect youth against institutional abuse. This bill would regulate residential programs notorious for abusing, attempting to convert LGBT youth. Let's be the change. Every child deserves to be treated with dignity and humanity. Stand with the Los Angeles LGBT Center and SEA organization against child abuse. Support SB 524. Go to PYIA.org and let your voice be heard.
Did you know that healthcare institutions provide arts programming for patients, families, and staff because of their healing benefits? Shorter hospital stays, better pain management, and less medication. Believe in the art. Go to www.mvcaf.org and click the donate button on any page. Support the Moreno Valley Cultural Arts Foundation.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
We're back. It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio. We are at raisingthevibrationradio.com. We're at latalkradio.com. I'm your host, Sheena Metal, and I'm at sheenametal.com. And the movement that started it all, even this radio show, we're at iamraisingthevibration.com. Please join us. And on social media, I'm just at Sheena Metal everywhere. Find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. The wonderful Lainey Kazan joins us again. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
Wonderful to have you back, my friend.
It's my pleasure.
So right before the break, you were talking a little bit about how there was a time when you worked for Donald Trump.
I did.
So what was? So you were talking a little bit about how that was. He was lovely. Was pretty.
He was wonderful. Actually, I worked at two of his hotels: Trump Palace or Trump Castle, and then at something, some other Trump thing.
And they're all Trump, right?
They're all Trump. He was going through a bad time at that time. Remember, he was declaring bankruptcy, and there were problems. He had a helicopter, and he used to generously let me go into the city and would fly me back to Atlantic City.
In the helicopter. Was that fun or weird?
It was great.
Okay.
It was great. It was so easy. You know, it would stop on a, it would land on a rooftop somewhere, and I would meet them, and I would get on the little helicopter, and it would fly back to Atlantic City. It took about 20 minutes. It was fantastic.
Wow.
So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed working for him. He was a great boss. He paid me on time. He and his wife at the time, Marla Maples, they took me out for dinner.
You were saying.
Then I went to, when Zohan opened, he invited me to his house in Palm Beach. You know, what's it called? Mar-a-Lago. And he was having a cocktail party and a dinner party, and I went there, and I went by myself, which was very brave.
Yes.
And I went by myself, and as I came down the stairs, I had just had this movie open, and everyone started laughing. And I thought, why are they laughing? They're laughing at me. They were laughing because they looked at me and realized how funny, you know,
I was.
So he was most delightful and sat at our table, didn't talk much, and he was with Melania.
Okay.
Is that her name?
Yeah. By then he was with Melania.
Yeah, and she is gorgeous. So beautiful and so elegant.
Yeah.
And a lovely, lovely
woman. She seems
woman.
Very sweet. Yeah,
I mean, I found her very bright and very engaging, and then I haven't seen him since he decided to run for president, and I'm not too happy.
I feel bad for her because I really feel that everything that she says when she speaks, she seems like somebody who is very anti-bullying and very into her child and into kindness, and then he tweets things that are sort of opposed to that, and I wonder what it's like what it's like to be married to somebody who's sort of putting out a different message than you would like to put out.
I think there's something wrong with that relationship. In my head, I don't know if this is true or not, and I don't want to accuse anybody, but it looks like an abusive relationship. She looks abused.
She looks, yes. She looks mortified.
She like never looks up, mm-hmm. and she walks like 7 paces behind him. Mm. And I don't feel good when I see them together.
And I think it's interesting because I saw this thing on the news about just this morning about how, you know, he tweeted something about the horrible terrorist act on Halloween,
right.
Where the guy mowed some people down on the sidewalk, and he tweeted something. Now they say maybe that there might be a mistrial, that this guy won't get a fair trial because when the president says something, it affects the entire country. And I think in that same respect, the relationship the two of them have, the way that we see him treating her, the way that we see him treating the people around him, all of those things trickle down because a lot of people are followers.
Oh,
so they see
they
the president do something and they think, oh, well, my wife can walk behind me now. The president does
exactly.
It. Which is why, whether, you know, I understand that the president is just a person. But that when you take on that job, you have to understand that you're taking on a responsibility for millions of people.
I don't believe he thinks about that.
No, I don't think he thinks about it either.
No, I don't think. I think Obama thought about it.
I agree.
He was a teacher in a way.
Yeah.
He taught the population to be kind, to be open, to be generous, to be thoughtful. And I think Trump just cares about himself and what he feels immediately as an individual.
Well, and
he's not thinking about the country at large.
It's a strange thing, because if you look back from our last, how many presidents? Back to through Carter?
Yeah.
They all were very empowering of their wives.
Yes, and their wives were very successful.
Yes, and their wives were very outspoken.
Exactly.
And their wives were very political. I mean, even now Rosalynn Carter is very political, even though she's well into her 90s.
Right.
So so now to suddenly have this sort of wife who's treated kind of like a dormouse.
I think it's
an odd message that it sends to the country. You know, I don't care what kind of person he is, and I don't care what he believes. The beautiful thing about America is we all have a right to be who we are. We don't have to agree with it, but we all have the freedom to be who we are, even if it's somebody sending mean tweets. But the problem is, when you're the president, you're sending a message to everybody.
Talk about raising the vibration.
Exactly. And he is not raising the vibration.
Right.
And it worries me that people see that, and then their own vibrations, they think it's okay to lower their own vibrations.
I agree.
That's what worries me. And I think that's why it's so important that all of us, no matter who you are in the country and in the world right now, we have to try to empower ourselves with as much positivity, light, kindness. Do things you love. Work with other people. Build your tribe. Artists, don't let the state of the nation paralyze you. Go out and make art, because art always raises the vibration. Go out and do something. Mm-hmm. You know, take on a play. Write a screenplay. Paint a painting. Do something to keep that vibration raised. Because I think as human beings, when things get scary on a national level or a world level, our first instinct is sort of to cover up our heads and crawl into bed.
Right. I think that the most vibrations that I can raise is to sing.
Yes, absolutely.
Because when I sing, those are my that's vibration.
Yep, absolutely.
That's
for real.
For real. I mean, you are vibrating.
Yes, you
to
are.
Get your voice out there. And especially if you do things that are sing about kindness.
Yes.
And love.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, all those wonderful things that we can sing about. And also some depressing things.
Sure, but that's still touching people.
Yes.
Even if you sing about sadness.
People need to feel.
Yeah, look at Adele,
feel.
Right? Every time I hear Adele, I think, should I go on Prozac? Because it's so depressing. But there are people that heal through being touched with sad things. My mom was that way. She loves sad movies, sad songs. That was sort of how she healed herself. You're still, like you said, you're making people feel. We need to not close ourselves off right now.
Because all these people who do little sound bites, and there's no room for feeling. There's no room for really communicating.
Yeah.
It's just hit them on the head. You know, if I say this enough in a short amount of time, they'll get it and they'll do it.
Exactly. Yeah. When I tell people, how long am I going to be with you on the air? And I say, an hour. Some guess it's 2 hours. They say, what? And I say, look, there's enough shows that give you a 5-minute soundbite.
Right.
This is a different kind of thing. This is a conversation where people are really hearing two people talk.
Right.
And we need more and more of that. We need to bring conversation back.
And we don't have conversation. I was sitting in a restaurant last night waiting for my friend, and I looked around me, and everyone was on the phone. Every person in that restaurant.
I know.
It was so upsetting to me.
I know.
And when my kids do, first of all, I have them check their phones in at the door.
Yeah, you were talking about that last time, in the last hour. Yeah, I think it's so smart. Well, and we were talking about in the last hour about how people go to restaurants, they don't talk to each other. They just sit on the phone.
I know.
Why are they even there?
Well, they just like to feel the presence of somebody, and then they talk to somebody else on the phone, and they have a group on having dinner together.
Look, the phone is a tremendous babysitter. If you go to the doctor and he keeps you waiting an hour, you've got something to do.
Right.
If you go to the DMV and you've got to wait, you've got something to do. I mean, sometimes I look at the phone and I think, what did we do when we just had to sit and wait when the doctor was 2 hours late?
Yeah.
We just sat there and looked
and
around.
Brought a book.
Right, brought a book. My mom would bring her sewing. You'd bring a magazine.
Right.
Something, but isn't it wonderful that we have the phone now so we can get things done while we wait?
Yeah.
But that's what it's for. It's not to replace your time with people. It's to be something that so that you can keep your stuff with you. You're always in contact for emergencies. You've always got it.
Yeah, it's a good thing.
It's a wonderful
thing. But at the same time, I liked my private time in the car.
Yeah.
I liked finding out where all the phone booths were.
And did you?
I knew where every phone booth was because I'd stop along the way and I'd think about I had to call so-and-so, and it was convenient to just stop. And then I'd get in my car and I'd be, I'd meditate, you know, kind of. I'd just drive and think about where I was going.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't think about where they're going anymore.
Yeah, I still
do
that.
You know, they overdrive or they underdrive or they hit people. And,
yeah.
You know, it's...
I love to talk on the phone in the car if it's late and it's keeping me awake or if I'm stuck in traffic.
Okay.
Because traffic's no fun. But
no.
If you're on the phone, you forget you're in traffic. I have my other house is in Huntington Beach, and I go down there. It was the house I inherited from my mom, so I go down there a couple times a week, and I'm working through her stuff. And, you know, you almost always hit traffic no matter what time you go. So it takes an hour, 2 hours. You know, it's supposed to take an hour. It takes 2 to 3 hours to get there every time. But I find it's a good time to catch up with friends, and it passes that monotony of traffic.
Yeah, that's lovely.
But when I'm driving and the traffic's moving, that's when I like music, and that's my meditation time.
Yeah, me too.
Because there's something really neat. I love to drive. People, I've never understood people that hate to drive. Oh,
I used to take trips by myself.
I do too. I take trips by myself, yeah.
You do?
I do.
I don't do it anymore because I have so many grandchildren and children. And
yeah.
It's like, oh my God. But I do love the fact that I'm alone in the car.
Yes, I do too.
That I have privacy in the car.
I love it. I had friends that did a conference for a couple of years, a spiritual conference in Sedona. And they would invite me to come because they'd all come to and done the show, my radio show. And people said, you're going by yourself? It's 9 hours. I said, I know. When do I ever get 9 hours to myself?
I know.
It was
the only thing that scares me is being on a deserted road by myself late at night.
Sure.
If I think to myself, oh, so many things could happen. I could break down.
Yeah.
I could meet a murderer. I mean, that doesn't make me too happy.
Yeah, no, I'm not a big fan of the middle of nowhere. But I'll tell you something. That was always my biggest fear. And I'm all about facing my fears now. That was always my biggest fear. And then when I came back from Sedona the second time, I started losing a tire. Right in the middle of the Arizona Sonora Desert, where you go from Phoenix to Blythe.
Yes.
And I thought, this is my worst fear. I'm going to wind up, as the sun is setting, stuck on this freeway, and there's not anything for the next 70 miles. So I'll tell you what I did. I'm lucky that in my car, there's a tire meter that tells you where the tires are at. I stopped at every single place I could stop, and I filled it up. And I just got it to the next place, and I'd fill it up, and I got it to the next place, and I'd keep an eye on it. And it wasn't the most relaxing drive because I white-knuckled it the whole way. But I made it, and then when I got home, I thought, wow, I made it through almost blowing a tire in the most desolate place I can think of, and I'm alive.
That's
sometimes just surviving something.
I know. It was interesting. I just finished a book called The Glass Castle. Did you ever read that?
No.
It's fantastic. It's, I can't remember her name, but a wonderful writer wrote it, a woman. And it's about this family that is, they're geniuses, but they refuse to live in society. And move out to the desert, and they pick up and go whenever they want, and they travel by night, and they sleep in cardboard boxes, and you would think they were like bums. But they're brilliant, and they're just anti-society. And it's so intriguing. It was a really good book. So, it was about they lived in Blythe. They lived in all these.
Blythe.
Yeah, I mean, could you imagine living somewhere like that?
I looked it up on, it's Jeanette Walls, right? Walls. Yeah, they're making a movie out of it.
I believe they are.
That's the first thing that came out, that came up, yeah.
Yeah, read it. It's really
I would love that,
yeah.
I remember when we moved here, we came in through Blythe. So we came from the East Coast, and we had, you know, the movers were in the van, and we were in, you know, the van that we had rented with the dogs and everything.
Right.
And we stopped and spent the night in Blythe. And I remember my mom saying, nobody comes to a place like Blythe on purpose. And I always think of it when I drive through Blythe.
Yeah,
but boy,
do.
When you've been in the desert for 70 miles with no rest stops, you're awful happy to see Blythe.
I know. But these people lived out in the middle of the desert.
I couldn't do it. I'm not a middle of nowhere person.
I know.
I'm a city girl. Yeah. I could live in the middle of a city.
I could too.
But I couldn't live in the middle of nowhere.
No.
But I kind of prefer now to live sort of urban suburban, not in the really the big.
I've always liked it. That's what brought me out here. The fact that it was beautiful.
Mm-hmm. It is beautiful.
The fact that it was peaceful. There wasn't a lot of traffic. There weren't a lot of people. And now it's like, holy moly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not the same place at all.
No. It makes
me
sad that
I always lived at the beach. I always lived up in the mountains. This is the first time I'm living in the valley amongst all these people.
Yeah.
And I missed the remoteness of where I lived.
Would
I
you go back to the up to the canyon or Malibu?
I might go to Malibu. I might, but it's become so shishy. You know, I lived there when it was just a...
It was hippies.
Yeah.
It had an earthy vibe.
It was great. And I might, but I think now it's so convenient to, like, run to the store or run to a restaurant. That's one thing that's like New York now.
Yeah.
You know, you can order from different places. And so I lived in the Palisades when there was hardly... it wasn't built up at all.
Yeah.
So I lived way up in the mountains. There were coyotes and, you know, what are those wild cats?
Yeah, mountain lions. Bobcats.
Yep. And it was interesting. It was fun. But now I wouldn't do it because it's not. It's so far. How far do you get to Beverly Hills? You have to really wait for the traffic. It doesn't matter what time you leave your house.
Yeah.
So that's why I did this. Me and my daughter and my granddaughter and my grandson.
Awesome.
It's wonderful.
When I grew up in Huntington Beach, it takes 15 to 20 minutes to get to the freeway. And that's a haul of your trip just to get to the 405.
Right.
Then you have to go someplace on the freeway.
And I don't drive on the freeways.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay, I will. I'll drive it.
No, I don't drive on the freeways unless they're going to be empty and it's going to be a great trip.
Yeah.
And I can get there quicker.
I've gotten used to it. That's another fear I faced. I'm like, I'm going to suck it up and just get in traffic. And once you get in it, it's not so bad. It's a little annoying, but it's not so bad. But I love being in Huntington Beach when I just want to decompress. Because, you know, I go to friends' house. One of my best friends lives down there, and I go to her house for dinner once a week, and she doesn't even lock her door sometimes. I mean, everything there is so still, so mellow compared to what it's like
That's
up here.
Beautiful.
But I love that energy of the beach, but then I also love the energy of being someplace where I can walk to everything. Both of those sides reside in me. And I love
really
New York, but I don't think I could live there full time.
Really?
It's just too much, I think. There's not enough. There's too much looking up and not enough looking out.
Where are you? I understand.
You know?
I do. Where are you from originally?
I'm from New Haven. So I grew up around New York. So my dad was from Queens, College Point, and my mom was from Poughkeepsie.
Poughkeepsie?
Yeah, Wappingers Falls.
Uh-huh.
So I could do that, but then you're that far out of the city again.
I love upstate New York.
I do, too.
Oh, my God.
I do, too.
It's just fantastic. It's so beautiful.
I love it. I'm planning a trip to go back with my mom's ashes.
Oh, I'm going to New York.
When are you going?
I'm going on the 1st of December. I'm singing at Radio City Music Hall.
That's fantastic.
On the 4th of December.
Oh, it's for Christmas.
Yeah, well, it's the 4th of December.
Okay.
But
it'll be Christmassy there.
I know. But I'm singing a few songs. And there's a whole Broadway contingency that's going to entertain. And it's a cancer for children, children with cancer. It's to raise money for...
Those words should never be put together.
I know.
There should never be children with cancer. That's just not okay.
How does that happen?
I don't know. I think it's one of the things that everybody struggles with on the earth is understanding why things happen like children get cancer. It's hard when you're trying to think positive and you're trying to believe in a benevolent higher power, and then you have to wonder why bad things happen. Yeah, and find a way that it's happening for a reason, and that's one that I
can't find that reason.
It's hard. It's really hard, but it's wonderful. You do a lot of charity stuff.
I do some. Yeah, I do. I've done a lot of charity for Israel.
Okay,
I've raised a lot of money.
Have you spent a lot of time there?
Yeah, my family's from there.
Okay.
They're from Jerusalem.
Okay.
My mother's family. And so I've raised a ton of money, and I've worked to raise money for AIDS.
Okay.
and for cancer and for heart disease. So I've done that. I'm also on the board of the Young Musicians Foundation.
It's fantastic.
And I'm on the board of the California Jazz Jazz Musicians. What will I call it? I don't know.
That's wonderful,
too. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I love supporting the things that I really, you know, I'm involved with.
Sure.
And I care about. And, of course, you know, I'm an adjunct professor at UCLA now.
Right, yeah.
So I start teaching in January, on January 4th or 5th.
So exciting. Talk about raising the vibration, right?
I know.
You're going to take all the love that you have in your soul for singing.
I do.
And acting and put it into young people who are... Who
I
are
have so much
just starting
information
out.
Inside
yeah.
me.
And you have so
you
much
know?
Soul.
Oh,
you're a very
you.
Soulful person. You have a beautiful old soul. And kids are going to pick up so much of that energy that comes out of you.
I love what
it's
I
gonna
do.
It's going to filter into them.
Yeah, and this is my sixth year.
Wow.
So I think I'm going to do a Funny Girl at UCLA.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I think. I'm having a meeting with the board. But
are you going to direct it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. But isn't it almost like your first time every semester because it's new people?
Oh, most definitely.
So it's like you get a whole new experience with a whole new class.
My children, my students come back and visit with me.
I was going to say, do you stay in touch with them?
Yes, I do. Not all of them, but a lot of them. And I'm very proud to say a lot of them are on Broadway now and shows all over the country. It's very exciting.
That's fantastic.
I love it.
Have you done a lot of directing?
No. I direct when they sing. I kind of direct the songs.
Right. But I mean, in your life, have
you
done?
In my life, when I was younger, much younger, I used to work at a camp up in the Adirondacks called Camp Shinawa.
Fun.
In Minerva, New York. It was
wow.
way up there. And I taught, I directed. I was an acting counselor. And then Francis Coppola was in the boys' camp.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
It was fantastic.
You've worked with so many wonderful people. I mean, you just happened to butt up against all these great people.
Yeah, I was very lucky. And I think it's like... you reach a vibration, you know, talk about vibrations. I think that we all vibrate in a particular tone or a particular...
I agree, yes.
And I think we find people who do that.
I agree.
And I was lucky to study with two of the great teachers of all time, was Sanford Meisner and Lee Strasberg. And I studied with a voice teacher that was staggering. He was amazing. He was from Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and he found me, and he trained my voice, and he did a great job, and he's in my heart. And
oh,
then my husband,
wonderful.
You know, who was a musician, a great pianist, and he introduced me to all kinds of music, not just from my generation, but from every decade. And I was very lucky to be with him because he was older than much older, and he taught me so much. He was like my Svengali.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That's isn't that wonderful? Is that how you got into jazz, or were you always into jazz?
No, I was never into jazz. I was into Broadway.
Yeah, well, I knew that, but I thought maybe you were into jazz, too.
I'm into jazz, but that happened as a result of the people who played music with me.
Right.
Because I found out that the jazz musician was the one who really turned me on.
Yeah.
And who really taught me about singing, because... Broadway is very regimented.
Yes.
And the music cannot be changed.
Yes.
And I am a very creative person and wanted to change everything I was ever in and give it another kind of point of view.
Yeah.
And so as a solo singer, I can do that.
Yeah.
And then as a teacher, I could teach other people to do that and how they can interpret something.
Right.
Not only lyrically, but musically as well.
Well, music is pure energy, right? I mean, music is you take your energy and the instrumentalists that are playing with you take their energy. The audience has an energy. You're putting the music out. They're changing the way the music hits them and the energy changes.
It's so amazing.
I mean, the whole thing. And you can change it at any minute just by changing a note or
a
volume or a tone. Everything becomes completely different.
Yeah, you know, the most intimate relationships I've had are with the people who play music for me. And yet, I don't really know them except through their playing. You can tell if people have a sense of humor.
Absolutely.
You can tell them if they're passionate, if they're, what are they hedonists, you know, or are they conservative? It's so interesting. So interesting.
Yeah, when I was little, my mom always had music. She cleaned the house. She had music for cleaning the house. She was stitching. There was music for stitching. She was painting. There was music for painting. Everything she did, there was music. And when I was four, she said, "How about an instrument?" She bought me a little guitar and sent me off to a folk school outside of Chicago. We were there at the time. And, you know, everything sort of related to music. And when she was sick, she had an episode with hypoxia, lack of oxygen to her brain. So she had the symptoms of a stroke. And the first day, she didn't know who anybody was. She didn't know who I was. So she didn't talk. She just sang everything. She sang all her answers. She sat
Whoa.
There and kind of rocked back and forth and sang to herself. And I never really realized how much music was a part of her life. I mean, I guess I did, but I didn't. She always said she could play enough piano just to sing along. there was always music in her car. When I sold her car after she passed, I clicked the thing in the CD player and a little country CD came out. And I thought, oh, my God, well, we must keep this forever. So I just recently found an address for one of her friends that she went to boarding school with. And I sent her something and let her know Mom had passed. And she was very sweet. She sent me a nice letter. I just got it a couple of days ago. And she sent me some pictures. And then she sent me a photograph and I flipped it over and it said, whenever I think of music and laughter, I think of your mom. And I thought, I never really... Laughter, 100%, because she was funny and broady and her sense of humor was dark. But I never really realized how much of her was music until I got that note a couple of days ago. And I thought, yeah. And it's like everything from our lives that had to do with music all kind of clicked in with me. And I realized how important... And she was such a Broadway... Whoo, was she a Broadway person? I mean, I think I was 2 or 3 years old and she was buying me soundtracks and, you know, I was learning all the music and she just loved
my granddaughter's like that. She listens to Ella.
Oh.
She listens to Louis Armstrong,
wow.
But she also listens to Broadway. She listens to pop music of the day. But she's very eclectic, as is my daughter. My daughter is a wonderful singer.
How old is your granddaughter?
My granddaughter's 18.
Wow.
My grandson is 2 and a half.
Oh.
He was Spider-Man.
Was
Spider-Man.
He so cute?
Yes. Oh, my God. He is the cutest thing.
Oh.
And he's big. He's tall. He's going to be tall like his dad. I think his dad is 6'4 or something.
Did you take him trick-or-treating?
Yes.
Okay. Well, some people don't now. People are scared of the trick-or-treating,
yeah,
and that makes me sad.
We went in a very nice neighborhood.
Right.
And we went to a friend's house who has the two little girls, and they played with Grayson. That's Grayson.
Oh.
His name is Grayson. And he's so cute.
Oh.
He said to me, he calls me Gigi. And he said to me yesterday, he goes, "Hi, Gigi, what's happening?"
Oh, my God. So cute. Oh, that's so cute.
Hey, Gigi. Oh, my God.
Oh, that's fantastic. And they both love music.
Yeah. Well, Grayson isn't old enough to really, but he dances to the music. But my daughter sings her fanny off, and my granddaughter she writes her own music.
Wow.
She writes profound lyrics. The music still is in a, you know, a growing state.
Sure.
But her lyrics.
Wow.
Yeah. Very grown.
That's wonderful. Do you write music?
I've never written. I can't.
Not lyrics either?
No, I try.
It's interesting how all of our talents, I mean, if you don't believe the talent is God-given, right? Everybody has their own thing. Everybody gets their own stuff.
Yes.
And everybody's is different. Right. I mean, if it was just something you could learn, we all could learn it.
Right.
That's how you know it's
well,
sort of
a gift. You're born with certain.
Yeah, you are. You're born with gifts. I really believe that.
I believe that, too. I believe it. And I think that people just don't develop their gifts.
I think that, too. Yeah.
You know, a lot of people have lots of gifts. I think that's evident now.
Yeah.
When you hear so many great singers.
Yeah.
I mean, years ago, there were like four singers that we knew in the world.
Yeah.
And now there's 4,000 singers.
Yeah. They're all great. I mean,
half the people that
I listened to as a kid that my mom loved from Broadway shows probably couldn't get on Broadway now because
right?
their voices aren't big enough. Now you have to have a real serious voice or you don't even work in a chorus.
How did it happen that everyone can sing?
I don't know. These Disney Channel kids, right? They're like 5, 10 years old and they have these huge big
voices.
Broadway voices. I don't know.
It's fascinating.
It's very fascinating.
It really is. I was on the ship.
Because you went on a cruise.
I went on a cruise. And they had a contest for the guests. You know, there were 3,000 people on the boat.
Yeah.
So they had a contest, and they had the evening where they had me and two other people judge the voice, it was called, and they had the chairs and everything that spun around.
Wow.
Yeah, they did the whole thing. And oh my God, I thought that skeleton was real.
I know, I did too. It's happened to me so many times.
God.
There's a really scary skeleton outside of my window, and when you're doing the show, you catch it just in your periphery.
Yeah.
And luckily, after Halloween, he'll go back around till next year.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we like to decorate here. It's a fun place.
Yeah, it is. It's lovely.
My bosses are from Israel.
They are?
Mm-hmm.
Where?
Yeah.
Tel Aviv?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. My lovely station manager, Ronan, that you just met, is as well.
Have you been?
I have not, no, but I would love to.
It's a really, really interesting place. You feel biblical.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful.
I'm serious. It's a magnificent place.
I find with them, because they really are about family, and they've really sort of usurped me into their family in the 9 years that I've worked here, which I think is beautiful. Growing up Irish, I think there's a lot of similarities between growing up Irish and growing up Jewish. The emphasis on family, sort of the oppressed history
right.
that makes you always kind of the underdog.
Right.
Giving back because you know what it's like not to have. The food is even very similar. So
really?
I sort of feel like I'm their little Irish foundling, and it's just worked out beautifully.
Why? The food is interesting.
Yeah, because our food is, you know, corned beef and cabbage and potatoes, and it's a lot of the same food,
but for some reason
Jewish food's better. I don't know. They just take all the stuff and make something better. Your food's better, our booze is better. I think it's just, you have to be, again, you're given gifts. You have to be good with something. But I find it, and it's funny because as I'm doing Raising the Vibration, I'm RaisingTheVibration.com, one of the things I'm trying to do is learn about holidays and religions and backgrounds that I'm not a part of so we can represent everybody. So Ronan, who is our station manager here, is sort of my go-to guy when there's a holiday, when I have a Jewish holiday and I want to make sure I don't do something dumb and say the wrong thing. And as we've gone through it, I said to him one day, you know, it's so interesting how the history of the Jewish people and the history of the Irish people is so similar. And he said, you know, there's some articles about that. And he sent me some articles that were written about the similarities
between
the upbringings.
Well, it's like when I did my big fat Greek wedding, everyone, without question, said to me, Lainey, that is just like my family.
Yeah, everybody.
It didn't matter if they were Chinese, Vietnamese, Irish, Italian, but everyone has that kind of family. Everyone.
Yeah.
And if they don't, you know, it's sad. They don't. But then they're like the Protestant family. You know, they're quiet. They don't say much. But they're still represented.
Yeah, absolutely. But what a wonderful movie that's. I mean, we're talking about Raising the Vibration. What a lot of joy that's brought people.
My
those
God.
Movies, right?
People say to me, thank you for all the laughter. And that makes me feel so good. Because I'll never forget the first time I was in college, and I was doing a play by Moss Hart.
Okay.
And I had one line, And I was said to myself, I got to make this line really good. And I did. And the audience laughed. And I could get chills thinking about it.
It's amazing, right?
And I was hooked. I was hooked. I knew that I knew how to make them laugh.
Yep.
And I knew when to make them laugh.
Yep.
And I got great joy from it. I have gotten great joy. And I'll never forget when Francis Coppola, who I went to school with.
Right. And camp.
And camp. I got him that job.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
What was I saying?
You were saying that you went to school with him.
Oh,
I'm talking about making people laugh and being good at making people laugh.
Yeah, I forgot. No, I don't remember.
It'll come back. No, it is. It's a thing, I think, that you realize that you can do. When I was in high school, my freshman high school end of year project was to do the one act Noel Coward's Fumed Oak. And it's about a guy who's very milquetoast and he lives with a very aggressive wife and her mother and the daughter, and they're all like her. And in the second act, the second scene of the first act, he tells them all, basically, you're all horrible and you treat me horrible and guess what, I'm leaving and now you have no money. So the poor guy that got cast as the husband froze when it was his turn to talk and he forgot all his lines. And no one knew what to do. So I just made things up as I threw his lines at him and everybody laughed. And I thought, oh, this is something I can do.
Right.
And it... I think then you realize that's a calling, because making people laugh is a way of being in service.
Oh, I remember what I was going to say.
Please.
I was singing at the Fairmont.
Okay.
And I was taking myself so seriously. I was a chanteuse, you know.
Sure.
And I was, you know, very nervous all the time. I would come out in these gowns and I was being somebody I really wasn't.
Sure.
And I had gotten to the point where I had my two nightclubs by then, you know, Laney's Room East and Laney's Room West.
That's awesome.
And I was, you know, partners with Hefner, and my life had just really opened up.
Yes.
And so I was on stage, and Francis surprised me by coming in to the Fairmont and coming backstage. And what he did was he had left a half-eaten apple, and he wrote, this is my apple, and I'm in the audience. And he came up to my room, and he said to me, you are so funny. I said, I am? He said, you're hysterical. The way you talk to the audience, how you deal with the audience, what you say on stage is so refreshing. And that was like, he gave me permission to be funny.
Wow.
Yeah, because all those years that I was singing.
Yeah, it's hard.
I never knew that I could mix.
Right. Well, it's not until just recently, right, when it was okay to do so.
Yeah.
If you were a woman and you were beautiful and you wanted to be taken seriously and get those roles, you weren't allowed to be funny.
Right,
funny was for the off-color looking girls,
right,
and they were never supposed to be serious.
They
were supposed to be, the two twains were never supposed to meet. And
that's true.
Now it's changed.
It has.
Now you can be funny, goofy and funny. You can be pretty and funny. But the world has changed.
I want you to meet my granddaughter.
Hi, how are you?
This is Isabella Blue.
It's wonderful to meet you. I'm
nice
Sheena. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You didn't know you were going to be on the show.
I didn't.
I just turned the mic on and you sat in front of it and here we go.
Here we go.
I love your grandmother. She's one of my favorite people in the whole world. She's absolutely fantastic. Aren't you lucky?
I am lucky.
She sure loves you.
She does.
We were talking about, well, this show's all about raising the vibration and about, you know, putting kind of positivity into the world.
That's great.
And I think a lot of that starts with family.
Absolutely.
You're
does.
Lucky that you're related, but family doesn't have to be people you're related to.
That's true.
Very true. I have a lot of close friends who have become family over, my 18-year lifespan? So, yeah, it's pretty.
And you'll keep doing that. And I think our business is wonderful because it allows you to continue to build family. You know, it's very tribal entertainment. So you're always meeting people through bands, through plays, through films you do, through television. Everywhere you go, you pick up new friends.
And you know what's really wonderful? Because I used to look at it in another way. I used to say, oh, my God, I've gotten so close to this group of people. And now I say goodbye and I'll never see them again.
Sure.
But I have friends who I was in school with or in plays with from the 60s.
I bet,
and they're still my friends.
Sure.
And we get together, and it's like no time has lapsed.
I agree.
No time.
Well, she doesn't age.
No, I know. I know, that's true. Yeah. Long after we're gone, she's going to look the same.
I know.
She's still going to be here and absolutely look. But I think you're happy. That's a lot of it. You're a happy person and you have good energy inside of you. And I think that keeps you young. Because I see, I just turned 50 this year. And my friends who are always worried about things and always angry about things, especially my female friends, I think look much older than me. Mm-hmm. Because that, you know, when you were little and grandma said if you frowned, your face would stay like that?
Yes.
It's kind of true. Your face kind of, you get to a point where your face does stay like that.
I think it does.
And I think happiness does something. It's like your, it's like a self-cleaning oven.
I agree. And it's inside and it comes out.
Yeah.
After a while, you become the person that is inside.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think
if you're lucky.
And I think after a while, some people start to look like the person that's on the inside.
Right.
That sometimes isn't the great person. Yeah.
Right.
But that's a wonderful attitude that you have that I think you have to have about making friends in our business.
But years later, I'll see somebody I worked with like in 1902 or something. And then I say,
just riding in their horse-drawn wagon.
And let's have a drink or let's have a coffee. And then the person has not changed.
Yeah, and you haven't changed. Yeah. Isn't that fun?
Yeah, it's
great. And almost every time you do a project, you make a friend.
That's
true. You don't stay in touch with everybody, but you stay in touch with some people. Every time you do a play, every time you do a show, every time you do a film, you make a friend that stays a part of your tribe.
Yeah, I like it.
Not only that, she is one of the strongest women I know.
I agree.
She has been through, let's just say, the ringer.
Yeah?
Yeah. And she's still standing.
My mom had a very interesting approach to life. She said that some people she thought were put here to go through horrible things, and she was talking about herself because she had a crazy life, so that they could be teachers. And I think, you know, you become sort of a victor of circumstance. And then others learn from everything that you've been through.
That's great.
And they hear your story of survival, and it prompts them to survive. Because
if you use it in that way.
Right, if you use it.
I mean, if you're selfish and you keep it all to yourself and you never share any information about the world or life that you've learned. And some people are not open to that hearing that.
No.
They're not. They just shut down, and it's hard to get to them. I have some students that are really hard to reach, and it's a challenge every day.
It's hard.
And friends like that, that used to work for me, and they'd be shut down, and it took years. And I have the staying power to really stay with it. Because they, to me, they're worthwhile.
Yeah, you talked about that in the last hour, that you really stick with people.
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, I am the same way. If anything, I had to learn that it was time to let people go. Because I would keep them forever and ever and ever. And sometimes,
even if they were negative energy.
Yes, that's what I mean. If they're
negative
positive, they can stay forever.
But,
that's a given.
Yeah.
But
sometimes,
horrible.
Sometimes negative energy is hard. And I think one of the things that was probably great about having you as a teacher at UCLA that nobody ever taught me when I was in school, in drama school, is that's one of the things you have to deal with in our business. Is not everybody's positive. And how do you navigate around that energy and still come home at the end of the day with a smile on your face and still soft enough inside that you can make art? Because I call it the Cadbury cream egg when you're an artist, because you have to have the hard shell or the business will eat you. But you have to have the softness inside or you can't make the art.
And you have to be able to open up the shell.
Yes, and let the gooey filling come out and then shut the shell when it's over.
Shut it quickly.
Here's a little bit of my nope, now I'm shutting it. But that's a hard thing to do because most people either stay open and get tossed around like a pinball.
Well, I did.
I did too.
I remember people coming backstage, and I'd be singing, and I was so vulnerable and so open, and they would say the cruelest things.
Oh, my God.
I mean, like, they... or
why?
They were trying to teach me something, but they approached me at the wrong time with the wrong verbiage.
Well, it's worse now. The media is so advanced.
Yeah.
You can send a text on the internet, and it's there forever. Whatever you say is permanently imprinted forever.
That's true.
And but I think that the greatest gift that parents can give their kids, especially now, is their wisdom from the time that they were younger, because it has changed drastically from that then to now.
But the one thing that I think is good about the media and that is that human beings are a primate that need edges. We talked about this in the last hour. And the one thing about the media is it sort of corrals people's bad behavior.
Oh, yeah.
Because rumor starts to get around that somebody's not behaving well, and then other people don't want to work with them. So that's the good thing about the media is it holds people's kind of douchiness accountable. I couldn't think of a better word than douchiness. That's not very vibration raising, but I had to say it. So in when I was growing up in school, and Lainey, when you were, teachers, directors, producers, they felt like they could come and say anything they wanted to you, treat you any way they could, because there were those that believed that the way to get a good performance out of you was to beat you into it, convince you were nothing so you'd give a good performance.
Yeah, I'm lucky that I didn't have – the only area or the arena that I was not happy with in school was math.
Oh,
I had teacher – her name was Mrs. Altshuler. I hope she's listening. She was so mean to me that it made me hate mathematics.
Yeah.
She would call me the darky in the back.
Oh.
Yeah, and she would embarrass me to go up to the board and do. I would get so nervous. I would shake in her classroom. But as an artist, I had only support. Only support.
Were you the darkest child?
I was pretty much, there were hardly any black folks in my school.
Do you think that she had a little problem
with folks? I think she did.
Folks, and you were the closest to a person of color?
I think so.
Isn't that interesting? I had a French teacher who hated me. And because I'm black Irish, people always ask me if I'm Jewish, and I get it. I'm from the Northeast. I speak quickly. I grew up in that area. So she would always ask me, and I would always tell her the same thing. No, I'm Irish. And she would say things like, well, you know, right? Hanukkah's coming up. And I would say, well, I know what Hanukkah is, but I'm Irish. So one day she was German, and one day she was teaching.
Oh,
And she said, she turned around and she said to the class, you know, Hitler wasn't such a bad man.
Oh my God,
and I thought, oh my
experience.
God.
Did I not tell you this? And then my English teacher said the same thing.
Hitler wasn't. And then she said, how many of you in here are Jewish? And of course, it was Orange County, so no one raised their hand in 1980 something. And I came home and I said, Mom, what in the world is this? She's like, we're getting you out of that class. Because my mom immediately got furious and knew exactly what was going on.
Well, that's understandable.
But then I was a straight A student and she refused to give me an A. She said that there was absolutely no way that she could. And I think to this day she thought that I just wouldn't come out of the closet. Isn't that? So that just made me more protective of everybody in my high school that was Jewish, African-American, Latin, anything that was different. I became the crusader.
Well, my grandmother sent me to, not purposely, but it was a great school. And I went to an all-Lutheran school.
Okay.
And I guarantee you, there were about, maybe 4 or 5 Jewish kids in the entire school?
Sure.
And I had a teacher who was named Miss Holton. I hope she's listening as well. And I had a petition to prevent her from teaching because she was absolutely awful with children. And we were talking about, you know, because in elementary school, some classes were built in the same place.
You sure.
Had math and English and science in one class. Well, I had a teacher, Miss Holton, and she told the class, we were talking about the Nazi party and everything in class, and all of a sudden she says, you know, come to think of it, out of all of the awful leaders that this world has had, Hitler wasn't that bad. Ooh. And I sat there, and I went home, and I told my grandmother, and she said, what? And I said, yeah, my teacher actually said that, and it hit something in me, and it made me want to go to the Museum of Tolerance, and I did.
Good for you.
And I saw something that you can't unsee.
I agree.
I did get her fired, though. So.
Well, and it's
petition
not just
granted.
I mean, I'm sure going to the Museum of Tolerance is the absolute worst if you're Jewish.
Absolutely.
But anybody who's ever been different, and I always say as an Irish person, if the Nazis had taken over Britain, the Irish would have been next.
Oh,
because
God.
They picked anybody who was anybody who was a minority and sent them off. And that's why we were talking earlier about this country, Lainey, and what's happening. It's why we need to make make sure in our country that we don't allow that to happen, that we keep good vibes going out.
It's
terrifying.
Because there is a faction of people in the world, and that means some in our country too, that would love to, you know,
eliminate
everything that isn't white, Christian, heterosexual.
Oh my God, it's a nightmare.
And women are only used for mating.
Yeah.
But isn't it wonderful what's happened?
It's fantastic.
They've exposed all these men.
I think that it's great.
Advantage. I think it's fantastic because now I think it's going to change so much art, so much television.
Oh yeah,
so many movies.
So much of the business of our business.
Television. There are already shows now that promote Black culture
and women.
The beauty behind it.
And women, we're the biggest minority. You know, we're
the
majority.
The Bold Type is all about feminine power.
Yeah,
Marlene King is in my eyes, she's a saint. She did what everybody else was afraid to do.
Well, and what a perfect time for The Handmaid's Tale to come out.
Oh, God.
For people to see what it could be.
Absolutely.
If women didn't keep, you know, fighting for our rights. And the truth is, we're, 53% of the population.
Right.
So if we decided, I'm not going to vote for anybody but a woman ever, that would be the end of men in politics. Not that
Yay!
I think...
Yay!
Not that I think that we should do that, because I don't think we should be prejudiced against men either.
No, of course not.
But if we decided to take it back and say we want all women, all we would have to do is vote. Not one single man had to vote for Hillary Clinton for her to win. Not one man. We did that.
She did win.
I know. But I mean,
technically,
win by a land for 53%, only women had to vote.
Yeah.
That's it. We could have done it ourselves.
Let's do it, guys.
Let's do it again. Come on.
You know what? I think men have been so afraid of our power.
Oh, mm-hmm. God, please, yes.
I really think that women's power is so overwhelming. The vibration of women.
Mm-hmm. Boom.
I mean, and what we can do. And what we've concentrated on is because of our physicality, because of our weakness. The only thing that was weak about us was the fact that we didn't have strength.
Yeah.
And that we didn't have the desire to go out and kill.
You mean physical strength.
Physical strength. And also, we weren't hunters.
No.
We weren't the person who went out there to kill the lion or, to, you know, get the meat.
Yeah, right, of course.
And
we were the, in many indigenous cultures, we were the shaman and the and the leaders because we weren't the ones out hunting.
We
were running everything. Exactly. Yes. We were gathering.
I said we found the nuts and berries.
Yeah. But we also oftentimes were the leaders that ran the community while the men were off killing a buffalo and bringing it back.
Yeah.
It's true.
It sounds so archaic now.
I know. But
it's insane.
It's no different.
Still people doing
I'm grateful that I grew. I mean, I did lack a father representation when I was younger.
I did too.
And I had all female power in my life.
That's nice.
And it was great. And it benefited me immensely, but I think that because I lacked that father figure, I have trouble understanding men and understanding what
they want.
No, but what prompts them to think that they're better, or what prompts them to think that they have this, what is it, that undeniable power over us, like physical strength.
Okay, have you ever met a woman who was very pretty and very blonde and the cheerleader?
Oh yes.
And she never had to build a character because everything was just given to her.
Oh yes.
Everybody wanted to sleep with her.
Oh,
everybody
please.
Wanted to pick her for everything. Everybody wanted her to the birthday party. So she never had to learn the skills and the humility of knowing what it's like to be the person who's not picked. I think that's what it is with men. I think everything has always, they've always been in charge. They've always been given everything.
Yeah.
So they just think, but I just take everything and we're just the president. And that's how it works.
Right.
And when it challenges them, and I've had friends, and I was telling you this in the first hour, Lainey, I've had some friends that I thought were really like feminist guys say really weird things to me the last couple of months. Like, oh, Hillary, she was so flawed. And you know, if Bernie had run, he would have won. It's all about flawed Hillary.
It's crazy, though. I have guy friends who are feminists.
I do, too.
And that's great.
But I also have guy friends that I thought were feminists that now are angry. Well, they're still feminists in a lot of ways, but they think what happened with her campaign was she was a woman and we shouldn't have taken that chance.
Right.
And I don't even think they realize what they're saying as they're saying it.
But this country is so retarded.
Okay.
I don't feel bad about saying douchey anymore.
No.
Well, good.
What I'm saying is that they're so far behind so many other countries.
I agree.
Have women in great positions of power.
I know.
And I don't understand why we haven't grown up, why we haven't evolved.
Well, I think it's because, and I talk about this on all my shows a lot, so, you know, in the 1600s, Europe took the people that were not moving with progress and sent them here, basically put them on a boat and pushed it west and didn't even care if they died or hit land.
Whoa.
And those people, those ultra-conservative, ultra-religious people, were the ones that founded our country. And even though our founding fathers were oftentimes very liberal and sometimes not even Christians, they were deists, still, that ideology of that Christian overlord has trickled down in our country.
Wow.
And we, even though most of us here are immigrants whose families came after that, we still have that. It's why are we a country as big and powerful? We are the entertainment capital of the world.
Very true.
But our country has almost no arts funding. We make the most art of any country in the world, but we have almost no funding for people.
When I found out that he did that, that he made that decision.
Oh, well, key. But even before that, we haven't had a lot of arts funding.
Right, but I mean, after everything that this world has endured in the
after
past,
after entertainment
what, year
has
and a
made
half?
His career. Yeah.
But that should have dawned upon him, and he should have realized that that arts is what makes a lot of children pay attention to what's going on.
I completely agree. But
in my classes, I used music to teach myself history. I'm a songwriter, so the notes that I would learn in the study guides, I would turn into lyrics, and that's how I would memorize it.
That's awesome.
It is a way for children to use music as an what is it called? An output for anger?
An outlet.
Everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it gave me a lot of my confidence and my strength, and I'm so grateful that I had that. I don't want other kids having that taken away from them.
I agree.
Absolutely.
But even before they cut it in the public schools, the number of arts endowments in our country was never anything like
that's true.
In Europe. I mean, never. Never. And you know, we claim to be this big sports country, right?
Oh,
our
right.
sports teams are the biggest in the world. But we don't fund our own athletes for the Olympics.
That's true.
Because we're stuck in that,
so intriguing.
Cotton Mather and Judge Danforth.
Right.
And, we're stuck in that. The Crucible.
Yeah.
We're still in Salem in a lot of ways.
Best explanation I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Of that.
It's why we don't understand Shakespeare. It's why we don't, we feel, it's why our films are so violent. But if there's
please.
A nipple, everyone freaks out. We're still talking about poor Janet Jackson's half a nipple we all saw for a millisecond. Yet you can watch somebody get disemboweled on Game of Thrones every week, and we love that. So that's because we come from those people where violence was okay.
So true.
Yeah. We need to get out of that. We need to stop that once and for all. If we all have to go live in France for 6 months, we need to
figure
something out, because
that is so brilliant.
We're too beautiful a nation to fall into that.
What's that wonderful woman's name on the news? It just went out of my head. On MSNBC.
Oh, Rachel Maddow?
Rachel Maddow. Sometimes I love her, and sometimes she annoys me a little
sure.
bit. But
she's very serious.
Very serious. But she said some things about Americans and the United States that were so inspiring. And she said, we are loud, we are wild, we are angry, we are beautiful. She just went on and on. And I said to myself, she's right, we are. We are a beautiful people here.
Some people.
We are, basically.
We're the nothings that the world didn't want that came here and made the greatest nation in the world.
That's true.
We're the ultimate underdog story, and we live it every day just by being Americans.
And I love that, though, because a lot of kids feel that way in school. We're the underdogs.
Yeah.
We are, what is it, the bottom of the food chain.
Yeah.
And it doesn't feel good to be bullied or to be attacked or to feel like a pariah. But with that, there comes this unbelievable strength as you get older. I went through the worst of the worst with bullying, and I came out stronger than I've ever been. And all of those people who bullied me felt that they had something going on in their lives, which doesn't excuse what they did.
Sure.
but it shows that there is power in being the underdog.
Absolutely.
There's something to grow from. There's nothing to go but up.
You know, Irish people, Jewish people, Chinese people took all the crappy labor jobs nobody wanted.
They lived in squalor.
Yes, and 50 years later, tenements. They were multimillionaires just on their own sweat. I mean, that's the American, that's the American dream.
You know what? My uncle, who became so rich, I can't tell you, he had a hot dog stand down on the Lower East Side.
That's awesome.
I don't even think I ever told you this.
No, I don't know.
He was my Uncle Irving, and he would go and sell all these little hot
dogs.
Yeah,
by himself every morning, right?
And then when he died, sold hot dogs to the whole country.
Oh, wow.
He was like the hot dog king.
Fantastic.
And wait, why have I never heard this?
He had one little cart.
Yeah, it started with that, right?
It starts with one.
Yep. We need to recapture that. We need to remember that this country was never founded by, it was never supposed to be about one group of people having money and not letting anybody else have it.
I mean,
there's always going to be that. That's humanity.
That's so frightening.
Yeah.
That's what I'm terrified about.
Yeah, I'm terrified about corporations taking away small business people. Pretty soon there aren't going to be any mom and pop restaurants or dry cleaners. Or everything's going to be chain stuff.
Well, I love now that there are businesses out there to support other women's small businesses.
I agree.
And I think that is, first off, whoever came up with that idea is genius.
I agree.
Because it shows women that there is something you can do. You can make a difference. It just takes one person to make that change.
Absolutely. It's very important. Yeah. What a great... I'm so glad you came. What a great last half hour this was with her here.
Great, yeah.
And how magic are you? Thank you for doing this with me, my friend.
Oh, you're so wonderful.
It's always good to have you here.
You are the best interviewer ever.
Thank you.
Ever.
And you just came and you agreed. Thank you so much.
You're so very welcome. I love being here, and I thank you.
I love having you here, and you're always welcome.
This is such a positive radio station. I love it.
It's good vibes,
it's
isn't
great
it?
Great vibes.
When I came to work here 9 years ago, I do a daily show here, and I started that 9 years ago. It kind of re-upped my faith in the entertainment business, in radio, in tribe. It's all about family. It's all about creating a family around you. And creative people, we crave family.
Oh, we do.
Because we're gypsies. We don't have that normal place we go every day. We don't have the normal town we live in every single day. So we make tribe out of like-minded souls.
I love that.
And we need to know that exists. And this place renewed that for me. And so,
it is unfortunate. Thank you for including us.
Anytime. You're welcome. Lainey, where can people find you online? Where's the best place?
It's LaineyCakes.com.
No, LaineyKazan.
LaineyKazan.com. Sorry, my email is Lainey.
Well, don't give that away.
I think it should be LaineyCakes.com.
It is Lainey Cakes with a K.
Okay.
My musicians call me Cakes.
That's so cute.
Don't ask me why.
I love that.
My drummer started that. He calls me, "How you doing, Cakes?" Or else he calls me, what does he say to me always? You're when you don't give up. You're a
tough broad.
No,
fighter, stubborn, resilient.
No, it's a descriptive word.
Is it a Yiddish word?
No.
Okay.
I can't think of it.
Okay.
But it's like a survivor.
Okay.
But it's when someone goes through, you're like, you go through every kind of drama, trauma.
Well, that's you.
Yeah.
And you're still smiling.
I know. Isn't
that's the
great?
Best point. You'll come here and talk about raising the vibration with 2 hours and not even complain about anything. No. Just talk about happy stuff.
She waits until she gets home.
That's okay. Trust me, so do I. As my best friend has a story that she tells, that her mom is also on Facebook, and we've been best friends since high school, so I know her mom really well. Her mom says, I don't know how Sheena does it. I go to her Facebook every day, and she's so happy. And my best friend says, yeah, you're not her best friend. wait till you get the phone call at 2 o'clock in the morning. And I'm like, well, somebody has to get the phone call so I can raise the vibration. I'm sorry it has to be you, but at some point... So at home is a good place to vent.
Yeah, it is. But I am a warrior.
You
she
are.
She really is.
You're tough.
You know, the craziest thing is after I went through everything, by the way, I will say bullying face-to-face, not worse than cyberbullying at all.
I believe that.
But when that happened and I came home and I told her everything and I just sat there and pawed, like, cried my eyes out. About 15 minutes after, she said, okay, you're done crying. You're going to use this and use it in a positive way.
Right.
And I did. And I created music from it.
It's beautiful.
And I'm a writer now, and I love it.
That's beautiful. I would be honored if you would come talk about bowling with me someday.
I would love
that. Come do my daily show, and we'll talk.
I would love that.
And bring some of your music if you want.
I would love
Or you can play
that.
In studio.
I would
I'd do
love
a nice
that.
Little mix here.
I would love that.
It'd be fun. Where can people find you, sweetheart?
Me? I am on iTunes. I actually released my own single.
Beautiful.
It's called Don't Let Me Down by Isabella, and it's copywritten.
Good.
And, yeah, Don't Let Me Down by Isabella, and you actually have to type by Isabella because I'm not with a label yet. And what else? What's that?
Well,
my website, I think.
You're with ASCAP.
I'm with ASCAP, and I'm also, I have a website.
What's your email? Do you want to tell your email?
No, she's going
to
tell her website.
My website is Beauty Beyond Scars, and I just talk about music and overcoming adversity and everything up on there, and it's a blog, and it's fun.
It's gorgeous.
So,
it's gorgeous. And I would be honored if you would give me your song and let me play it on my music show.
I would love that.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Do you
I'd
have my CDs?
I don't. No, you need to bring me those, and I'll play them on my music show.
Excellent.
I would
Let's
love
do
that.
I'm going to play all the family music.
All right.
You let me know. And you both should come back together and do my music show. That would be fun.
I
we'll
would
play,
love
we'll
that.
Play both your music.
All right. That'd
Wednesday afternoons. We'll make a plan and do
all right.
it.
Great. All right.
If you missed any of those links, you can go to Raising the Vibration Radio. You can go to LA Talk Radio. I'm at SheenaMetal.com. And, of course, the movement of peace, love, kindness, and unity that gave birth to this beautiful radio show is at I Am Raising. TheVibration.com on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm just at Sheena Metal. Thank you so much for being here, Lainey. Thank you so much, Isabella, for being here.
Thank you
it's
so much.
So wonderful to have you both here talking about positivity and love and joy and all the things in life that are so important. Until I see you all next week, next Monday from 7 to 9 p.m., remember, always think in terms of the hope of peace. Always live with love. Always lead with kindness. Always, always, always think of us as a unified people. And whatever you do, wherever you are, whatever's going on in your life, keep thinking about how it is that you can raise the vibration. I love you all. Thank you for listening, and I'll see you next week.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.